tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 454 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. My name is C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Hello.
All right, guys. Well, we did learn some information about what the plans are for the upcoming holiday season. And yeah, some interesting stuff here. Seda, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
So yeah, they posted, let me pull up the Facebook just to be clear. So yeah, they posted some schedules over the weekend, what they're going to be doing during the holiday season. And so there's two lineups that we've learned. So this upcoming week is a normal week, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. So that's the 20th. On the 27th, this is probably the most interesting one. So on the 27th, they're doing a Dandadan marathon. So that's like the Saturday after Christmas. But it's not just a Dandadan marathon. They're also doing a sneak peek of Dandadan Season 2, which seems to be just... It's a half-hour slot, so I'm assuming it's just the first episode?
Well, it's from that point till the end of Tsunami, so do we know it's technically half-hour, or are we just assuming it's a half-hour?
I'm just going by... It says at 12 a.m., Season 2 sneak peek. And then it says at 12:30 it's 108, 109, 110, 111, 112, which I assume is just shorthand for season 1, episode 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Oh, the sneak peek is at the beginning? I thought it was at the end for some reason.
It's both.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming it's a rerun. Here, let me post it.
Yeah, that may be helpful.
Yeah, it appears at the beginning and end of the block.
The reason I asked is because in movie theaters, there was a sneak peek of season 2, which was the first three episodes combined into a quote-unquote movie. They do that for a lot of anime where like the first few episodes of a season, they'll have a sneak peek in theaters, and they'll call that like a, again, a big quotation marks movie, and they call it like a sneak peek. Like, I think Jujutsu Kaisen season 3 just did that. I think last weekend there was a release in American box offices of something for Jujutsu Kaisen, which I think was a sneak peek, again, quotation marks, of season 3, which I think was first few episodes. So this is a pretty common thing for like big shows. So I was wondering, are they bringing those first three episodes, which is a theatrical sneak peek, are they bringing that to TV? Is that what they're doing? If it's repeating at the beginning and end of the block, it's probably just one episode, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. It's a 30-minute thing. Unfortunately, the post itself just says, Happy Early New Year. So it doesn't say what the sneak peek is. I mean, on Facebook. So yeah, sneak peek, which I would assume is just the first episode.
Yeah.
Now they haven't said like specifically, explicitly, season 2 is joining the block, but you would have to imagine it would be.
It would make no sense now, to do this. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't use the term sneak peek unless it's a peek into the future, which is the future of Tsunami airing season 2, which I think is great news, by the way, in and of itself.
Yeah, it's just unusual because normally we normally don't get a sneak peek.
I think there's some logic here because, a couple of reasons. One is, they're confirming that they are going to have the second season available to them. Second of all, I think it's kind of nice in that, like, because when we return, and you're going to get to this in a moment, we're not at the end of the current season yet.
Or Dandadan? No, we just aired episode 7, which was the conclusion of the Battle of the Acrobatic Silky.
Oh, you mean in the reruns?
So, okay. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. I was kind of thinking out of left field there. It's a Dandadan. It's the end of Dandadan is what they're airing as a... The end of the first season of Dandadan that they're airing as a...
Marathon, yes.
Marathon, thank you. I couldn't think of the word for some reason. But instead of just doing episodes 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, they decided to go ahead and air probably episode 1 of season 2 to kind of give like an extra bit of like, you know, fun content, because when we come back, as you'll get to, Dandadan isn't on the block yet.
Right. And that's what I was saying. It's a little bit unusual. I can't think of another show where they've aired like an episode.
I can.
One of the Fooly Cooly, I think, alternative they did, I think.
Yeah, they showed Fooly Cooly alternative before the sequel Fooly Cooly series were available.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember
that.
I
think that. Even it was in like, Japanese with like, subs, I think.
That was like an April Fool's thing. Yeah, it was the Japanese night, yeah. Yeah, I do remember that now, but it's very rare. But yeah, so they're on the 27th. We're doing a Danadan marathon, the end of the season one, which if you remember how season one ends, it's like a cliffhanger. So season two is going to pick up right there. And we'll get to see that first episode, presumably, twice. I guess they're airing it at the beginning and the end of the marathon. So that caused some confusion earlier in the podcast.
If it is episode one, that makes all the more reason they'd air it at the end of the block.
Yeah, but they're also airing it at the beginning just so you don't have to stay up so late. So you can just watch that if you want, just season two, episode one, and then, you know, enjoy the holiday weekend. And then the week after, which is in the new year, so this will be a few days after the new year, on January 3rd, our premieres are actually the same as they are now. Bleach, Blue Exorcist, Mashal, One Piece. Those are the same. And then Danadan rerun is the same. I actually don't pay a whole lot of attention to the current rerun, so Daima is a rerun. And that's the same as now, right?
Correct.
But then they're also adding, in the rerun slots, which is sort of unusual, Zom 100 and Rick and Morty, which are shows that have already aired. Which is, I guess, you know, none of us really watch the reruns. And it's kind of, you know, it's just the rerun slot literally in the dead of night. But they're adding, what, an hour or a half hour of
half
rerun slots
hour.
Here? Oh, because Naruto is getting cut off?
Yeah, I assume the contract ended for that. The contract from when they did Rewind, it's probably finished, so rather renew. Just move something in.
Them having Rick and Morty anime show up in the rerun slot doesn't surprise me. Zom 100? I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah, because Rick and Morty is something they own, so they can run that whenever they want. But Zom 100, presumably they had to like license it, so maybe they just still have rights to
it. Yeah, that's why the license is still good, so they might as well.
Yeah, it's
probably like, hey, the license will expire in a few months. Might as well give it another run through and then let it expire.
Makes perfect sense.
So yeah, some interesting stuff here with the lineup. And I mean, I think the big takeaway here, the biggest news out of all of this is, of course, that the confirmation, I guess, unofficially, but well, I guess officially.
Well, that's pretty official.
Yeah, pretty official, I guess, because it wouldn't say sneak peek otherwise. So yeah, Dandadan season two is going to be airing on Toonami, which is great news because I've heard that's really good.
Yeah, I would say, like, I don't think it's really as much spoilers to say, but like, if Dandadan season one was ranked a 16 of our top shows, I think season two is also a 16. Like, it doesn't like all of a sudden get much better, but it stays really, really great. So like, you know, it's just still awesome. That's, you know, I don't think it's a spoiler to say show still keeps on being good.
Yeah, I mean, considering a lot of shows recently, unfortunately, have had serious downturns in their sequels, it's great to have a show like Dandadan that consistently continues to be good.
Yes, Promised Neverland. Oh, wait, that didn't have a season two. What are you talking about? There was only one season of Promised Neverland.
Well, actually, I'm also thinking of One Punch Man. Yeah,
yeah, season three. Whew. I feel bad for everyone involved.
Yeah, I feel bad for, you're right.
I'm curious, so for Dandadan, we got the DVD, or not DVD, Blu-ray versions. The season two Blu-ray is, of course, already out in Japan. It's not out in America yet. I'm assuming, like, I guess the question of Dandadan season two is probably coming sooner than later in the new year. So is it coming after Mashal ends its current run? Once that season two ends, is that maybe the next slot that opens up for a premiere? Is that our thinking?
I don't know. Apparently, the Blu-ray volumes.
I'm not looking English, my understanding, unless that
you're right. It came out. They came out in Japan on October. I guess that's right. And then, but I don't have a release date for the American release of that. So, yeah, I don't know.
But I guess if they've already been out in October in Japan, and like, let's say then season two comes out in America on Toonami, like February or March, that's probably gives enough time to dub the Blu-ray versions and use those masters. Because I assume they want to do that since they did it for season one, and it was always to the show's benefit. So it doesn't make sense to me they'd use DVD Blu-ray masters for one and TV masters for another. It seems like they continue using Blu-ray masters. That just seems like the most logical and the best for everyone involved. So, yeah, I think if Mash Bros. Show it ends the soonest, I don't know when it'll end off the top of my head, maybe sometime February, and I could see Mash Bros. Like moving to a rerun slot and then parlaying into season two of Dandadan. I think we have more Bleach left than we have Mash Bros. Left, but again, I haven't done the math in the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure on that, but we'll find out. I assume, even if it's just the Crunchyroll version, that'd be fine. I mean, obviously, but okay. So that's the big news. Big lineup change. Not this weekend, the following weekend, a couple of days after the holiday, Christmas holiday. And then, after New Year's, interestingly enough, no kind of New Year's marathon or anything, just a normal block. So that's interesting. Yeah.
We've had very few marathons this year, I feel. Most holidays have... There have been a few. There's some of those are Halloween. There's a Christmas one. Do we have a July 4th marathon? I don't remember. But
I don't think so.
I think very few marathons this year overall.
Yeah. I've got one other piece of news here to talk about. We did get a special piece of animation that played right before the first commercial break this past weekend. It was a small short animated film called Einvik's Curse. At first, I wasn't sure what we were seeing because it kind of like it didn't cut to a Toonami or Adult Swim title card. It just went directly from the episode right into the Bleach episode right into this. But yeah, it was, I don't know, about 5 minutes long or something like that. Gave me real like, I don't know if you were, maybe I'm showing my age here, but like the old 1980s heavy metal movie, animated movie. It gave me vibes of that kind of.
Yeah, I could definitely see like some like, not necessarily tech inspired, but definitely like a D&D with extra edge kind of thing. I will say, for like maybe 15 seconds or so, I thought this was like a promo for like a surprise premiere or something until I realized like, oh no, it's actually just my music video because we haven't done one in Toonami for a while. So it threw me off guard for a second until I realized what was going on.
Yeah. I didn't do too much research on this. I did quickly Google it and found out that this was a sort of passion project that an animator had worked on for over the past several years. So I kind of get the impression here, and again, I don't know, but I got this impression that someone at Toonami saw this guy's work and wanted to give him, you know, an opportunity to see, have his work seen. So it's kind of cool if that's the case.
I mean, this is something pretty common for Toonami, and I think this is one of the things that makes Toonami such a valuable brand, because it's not just here's some anime or cartoons. It's like a whole vibe, it's a whole block, it's a whole aura that's just extended over, I guess now we're, what, is a new Toonami like 12 years old now or something? 11 years old? I don't know.
It's over run a decade. Longer than old Toonami.
Right. It's so like the old Toonami was like 11 years. This new Toonami, I guess, is now 12 years. Like this, just the way Toonami will just bring up like new faces, new voices, new things you never expect to see anywhere else. This is just part of what makes Toonami Toonami and what makes it such an endearing walk. And so, yeah, kudos on whoever at Toonami adopted and reach out to this guy or gal or whoever and brought it onto the air on air. Yeah,
I think it's great. I mean, like, that's exactly when it was over, I was kind of like, this isn't a promotion for anything. This isn't tied to any kind of Adult Swim property. This is just them showing someone's work. And I'm like, great, good on you. That's cool. And I thought it looked kind of neat. I mean, it was definitely well made. All right. So that's it for the news this week. Let's go ahead and get into the rundown. And of course, we're going to start with Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand-Year Blood War, Core 3, Episode 3, The Dark Arm. So, it starts out with this character named Yushiro. Again, my Bleach lack of knowledge, I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah, he's not a rando, he's actually a pretty well-known character, like, especially back in the Soul Society arc. But, I mean, yeah, you say you're not familiar with Bleach, so that's totally fair. But just to make the record clear, he's not like a rando, he's a pretty important character.
Yeah, I don't even need that explained to me because it's obvious because like Rukia is talking to him in like a way that they've like known each other for a long time and stuff.
I think they mentioned Kayan. Are you familiar who Kayan is?
No.
Okay, so like that was also a pretty big flashback, I think, during Soul Society arc. Basically, Kaien was, well, I'm not going to go the whole spiel, but he just was a very important character to Jushu and Rukia, and he looked suspiciously like Ichigo, and he was, I think, Ganju's like cousin or something. It's kind of a weird thing, but like they brought up Kaien a lot, so I was just curious if you were familiar with him, because his whole flashbacking deal was pretty important like 200 episodes ago, but.
Nope. Yeah. Again, to make it clear, this is my knowledge of Bleach, okay? I know what happens in, like, the first episode, and then I only know what happened at the very end of what was previously aired on Bleach. So everything in between that, like, I've heard things, like, I've heard of Aroncars, and I've heard of Hueco Mundo, and I've seen, like, people with skull faces and stuff, but I don't know anything that happened. So all that history is lost to me. That's why it's interesting, I think, for me to watch this show, because I'm kind of coming in blind. Aside from the general cultural osmosis of knowing who Ichigo is and stuff like that, I don't really know the story of Bleach.
Kaien was the lieutenant, to just be clear, not to maybe give everything away because I want to go into the whole Soul Society nonsense, but Kaien was the former lieutenant of Jushiro, who, again, was a relative of Ganju, and looked especially like Ichigo, though he wasn't related to Ichigo, but he looked real a lot like him. And so he's an important character to both Jushiro and Rukia. And so I'll just leave it at that. And so, yeah.
And also, Kaien, the gaps a little bit. Jushiro Ukitake. Okay. Jushiro Ukitake has been like a captain of one of the court guard squads for like forever.
He's a captain of the 13th squad.
And he's also like best friends with Shunsui. Like they pretty much always showed up together.
Yeah, they've been friends for like a long time in the show, yeah.
And this flashback even showed some of that. And then, yeah, Kaien was his lieutenant before he died, and then Rukia became the lieutenant. So Rukia has been his lieutenant for a while. So that's why she was kind of like the most distraught at the happenings of this episode, because this was her captain basically sacrificing himself.
Yeah, I kind of get, and again, it wasn't explained to me, but even just through contextual clues of watching this episode, I got the impression without knowing that she was his underling.
I'm not sure if Rukia got promoted to lieutenant at this point. I think she was third seat, but I would have double checked that.
But she's in that division or squad.
Yes, she is under Jushiro, and they're very close to each other. But I think she's third seat rather than actually lieutenant. I think that slot remained open after Kaien died, because Jushiro even mentioned
he wanted to appoint me.
All right, so let's blow through this rundown here. So Jushiro, okay, everything's going crazy. People realize that the Soul King has been killed, and Jushiro says he plans to take the he's going to take the Soul King's place, and he kind of stabs himself or something, and this big dark mist comes out of him, and that's when we cut into this pretty much long flashback that takes up most of the first half of the episode, and it's basically Jushiro's life, where we learn back in the past he had some kind of illness and some people were doing this weird ritual where they basically healed him. They healed him. We see when he first meets Shunsui and they become friends. Jushiro shows Shunsui this thing called Mimihagi, which is like this big statue thing that looks like a hand with an eyeball in it, which is what granted him his power to be healed. We get more and more flashbacks. I guess we see them joining the Soul Society and stuff like that, and meeting new people and stuff like that. And they come like best friends, basically. And this is all leading up to back when we come back to the present, where we see that basically what happened was when he was being healed, what was really happening was that the quote unquote right arm of the Soul King was put into his body, and that in order to save the Soul King, or to maybe not so much save the Soul King, but to protect the Soul Society and the rest of the worlds, he was going to release the right arm of the Soul King. He's going to become the right arm of the Soul King, metaphorically, by literally
not metaphorically,
having this...
not metaphorically, literally.
Okay, well, regardless, he releases this energy, this black energy that goes up, and we see it later in the episode. It kind of goes all the way up into the palace and grabs a hold of the crystal and holds it in place. So it's like he is taking over for the Soul King in a sense right now. Anything in this first half that you want to mention before I move on?
What I was going to say was, it seems like this existence of this sort of like detached portion of the Soul King is not really like widely known. Like even Urahara, or the green hat guy, I'm getting names mixed up here.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about.
he was even like, I'm not really aware of what this is. You know, he's not aware of this, like exactly how it works or how long it's going to last or whatever. He makes some like suspicions or hypotheses, but it feels like he's not really knowledgeable with like exactly how this came about and all that. So it seems like this is a pretty niche, Jushiro's family kind of treated it like almost like a local god or whatever, this right arm of the Soul King. But yeah, this isn't a widely known thing among the Soul Society.
Yeah,
I guess.
I think there were other people commenting to him being like, you don't know what this is?
I think he even says in this episode, he's like, I've never seen this before. I've never even heard of it. Like, oh, you've never even heard of it. So like that, usually the green hat guy knows about it, knows everything, it feels like. So,
yeah, he gets some advanced chapters in the manga, and so everyone just goes to him to fight for the spoilers. And he's like, I don't know, my leak guy didn't come through. I have no idea what's going on.
Okay, one question before we move on. The flashback scenes, especially when he was a little kid and when like a teenage or young Jushiro and Shun Shui meet on the street and stuff, and we see them walking around. Where is that?
That is the Soul Society.
Okay.
We mentioned this in an earlier episode. There is like the court guard area, which is like where most of the Soul Society like stuff takes place. But then there's like the town, which is sort of just around.
Yeah, there's like a country. Like there's like, yeah, yeah. There is obviously Central 46. There's obviously the barracks of all the major Thirking squads. And then beyond that, there's just like peasant folk and like country and rural shit. And yeah.
So that's not like the human world. That's the Soul Society.
Right. Yes, it's all part of Soul. Yeah, all Soul Society. But yeah, the obvious souls and Soul Society like age and get anime dying diseases and
even all though the it is like sort of the it's sort of like was originally the afterlife or they control the afterlife of the human world. We've talked about this. It gets weird.
Yeah, it's like they live lives there. It's interesting.
This is one of those things that they probably have mentioned this before, but in the flashback they're talking about like they're in Soul Society, like Soul Reaper school basically.
Yes.
Training. So,
yeah, I mean they talk about this like, do you want to join the Soul Society? And and that's when I was confused because I'm like, are they on Earth? How would they know? They must not be on Earth because how would they know about that?
I didn't think they joined the Soul Society. I think it was joined Soul Reapers.
Yeah, Soul Reaper School.
Okay. Well, okay. So one last thing, real quick. So there's a bunch of people who live in that place that where they were that are not Soul Reapers. They're just people.
Yes.
Yeah, most people in Soul Society are not Soul Reapers.
They're just ordinary soul people who
soul people
live.
I don't know what they're called.
We just call them souls, I guess.
Soul people,
guess,
right?
Yeah.
They take the soul train to the Soul Society, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Their soul calls and driving the soul highway.
I'm never going to get over this ridiculousness of the Soul Society to me, like, I don't know. It does. I mean, it totally feels like an idea where it was supposed to be the afterlife, and then he changed his mind. That's what it feels like.
No, but even me, like with Bleach, I'm not a Bleach expert, but I have seen all the episodes up to this point over a long period of time. Even me, I had to remind myself, like momentarily, oh yeah, this is not the Earth. This is the Soul Society. It looks like this. It looks like any Japanese town.
Yeah, I thought it was taking place in the ancient times.
Oh, like feudal Japan or something? Like real world something?
Yeah, because like we don't know how old these freaking soul people live. I mean, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, don't think about it too hard. Nothing about this, very little about this makes sense. So don't think about it too hard. Like just enough to like, I guess, get the vibes and the context. But beyond that, just start hurting your brain. Because we all will, because it just doesn't really make a lot of sense when you think about it too hard.
So we cut back to the Yuha-Waha fight, and this has got more sort of Ichigo, and we've getting some of the other players joining in. Orihime tries to heal this whole king, and it doesn't work. Chad tries to do an attack. Not a lot happens there.
They feel like the Jobber Squad, Chad, Ganju, and
One of them is Gon Drew, and just all I can think of is that meme, like this bro thinks he's on the team meme. It's just like, what?
He's
like,
kind of oddball out, isn't he? Yeah, I thought that too, even not knowing.
I know Chad doesn't get to do anything because the writer hates him or Kubo hates him and whatnot, but Gonchus is like, even like, are you here, bro? It's just like, what are you doing here? More than anyone else.
He hasn't contributed anything.
He tried one punch. It didn't really work.
Yeah.
I think he just threw some smoke bombs. At least, yes, Chad got through a bunt punch even though it didn't do anything. I think Gon just threw some smoke bombs and jumped real high.
Oh, right. Yes.
So this is when we see that Jushiro's black hand power is holding the Soul King in place, preventing the worlds from being destroyed. But what the most interesting aspect of this is when Yuhabaha sees this, he's really shocked. And he's like, literally out loud says, why didn't I foresee this? His supervision did not foresee this outcome. So there's something special going on here that he couldn't see this potential outcome from happening with his super, you know, Sharingan eyes. So I'm clocking that as being important.
Yeah. Like I said, even Yuhabaha was not aware of this right arm of the Soul King detached inside now of Jushiro thing that's going on.
We then cut back to the Soul Society underground prison where Shun Sui is walking up and he's going to go have a chat with good guy Aizen.
Good guy Aizen.
That's Chair-sama, thank you very much.
So yeah, I'm going to have to explain this to me. So this is the beginning of what was called Chair-sama. So basically, just to make it brief, Shun Sui has a talk with Aizen. He starts to like unlock some aspects of so that Aizen can speak and that Aizen can move his arm and stuff like this. It's like he's giving him like very slowly giving him this ability. And part of this is like, hey, I'm going to have you sit in this chair and then you can help us save the Soul Society. And Aizen is like, why would I want to save the corrupt Soul Society? And he's like, that's kind of where the episode ends, where he's just like being very like, I could help you, but why would I? But yeah, I kept seeing a lot of like posts in the group watch thread about like, it's Chair-sama. So what's the deal here?
I'll just say wait. Just you'll see in a few, next episode and episode afterwards, you'll see why the meme was born.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm very vaguely aware of Aizen in a chair. And I don't know why. Just something with Aizen and something with a chair. And now I see Shun Sui is like, hey, Aizen, come sit in this chair. I'm not entirely sure why, like, what's the intent here? Like,
Me neither.
Is going to, like an elevator up to the Soul Society, like, from their underground prison, and then he's going to do something on it? I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah. So this is, I guess, the quote-unquote introduction of Chair-sama, whatever that means. But yeah, so it does look like that it's possible and very likely that Aizen is going to do something, but whether he helps out or not, we're going to see, because he's certainly at the end of this episode doesn't seem particularly interested in it, regardless of the fact that he really doesn't have like any other thing to do right now. he's just imprisoned. So, but yeah, that's the episode. What did you think of this episode, Crocodile? You have anything you want to add or anything, any general thoughts about it?
I don't know if I want to say it's a little Deus Ex Machina, how kind of Jushiro just had like the, perfect four. Like, granted, this was all technically a setup by, you could say, the Soul King, just as a failsafe, so to speak. So like Mimihagi was like as a local deity from where around Jushiro was born and whatnot, and everyone knew about Mimihagi, but they didn't realize that it was related to Soul King at all. So that's kind of the surprise part. But I always read this as the Soul King preparing a contingency plan, so he planted his arm into Jushiro just so like if shit goes down sometime in the future, there is something that can be done about it. That's my reading of like why this happened at all. And so like, though we were just kind of introduced to this out of the blue, so it's kind of a way. So like,
yeah, like was this set up at all or just introduced right now?
It was pretty much just introduced right now. The concept of like, I mean, the Soul King has been a thing that's been mentioned back like 200 episodes ago, but like this thing where like they had a backup plan and this was Joshua's apparently like, quote-unquote purpose and all that stuff, this is kind of out of the blue kind of stuff. And I guess maybe Joshua and Shunsu, we were talking a little bit about things like, oh, you know, sacrifice is about to be made, so you could maybe say that was like a very slight tease if you wanted to give it a generous reading, but it could also just been like, yo, we're in war, shit's going south, so like, you know, we may not live to see this end of this, which is kind of a common thing to say anyway in this circumstance, so... Yeah, this is kind of out of the blue. I guess it kind of works, but it is pretty much kind of a little bit of a Deus Ex Machina kind of thing.
In this show, or no way, you can't possibly.
Yeah. I mean, sure, but I'm just saying. I mean, sure. I mean, I guess thematically it works. And there's some kind of poignancy to this, I suppose. So it's definitely not the worst example of it in the show, I would say. But it definitely does come off pretty like this. Just kind of came out of nowhere, but you know, I guess it works out kind of, sort of, if you don't think about it too hard. But it was a fine episode. Like, you know, Jushu gets a send off. Kira-sama's about to be born. Things going on. Ganju's contributing, kind of, not really. But yeah, it was pretty much Bleach being Bleach. Generally a good time.
Anything you want to add, Seda, before we move on?
I wonder how significant this Jushiro thing is going to be like 3 episodes from now, or they're just going to move on to the next twist. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're about to move into the whole Aizen piece here, and the Jushiro thing is just going to be like keeping things completely ending. Yeah. I kind of get that jive too.
Jushiro's basically the reason the arc doesn't end now. Like, so the reason we get like another rest of the season and then the season after that is because of Jushiro, basically.
All right, well, let's move on to Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist, Beyond the Snow Saga, Episode 6, Awakening. We are not quite beyond the snow yet. So let's talk about what happens here. Shura meets with Mephisto. Short hair Shura is talking to Mephisto.
They mention how she like still has her sword, which is like the Fang of Hachiro, which is like, I guess a sword is still a sword, but it's lost some of its power.
It's like depowered, but it's still like you know, sword is still sharp, so you can still cut chick with them, as Shura demonstrates momentarily. But I
had to laugh at this part of this. At the very beginning of this episode, Mephisto's like, "Yeah, the Illuminati got Hachiro," and
yeah, that was the most
Shura's like,
we
even joked about this, like they just let him go, and they're like, well. What are you doing? The Illuminati are looking for him, and they're gonna pick him up. And then, yep, that's exactly what happened. Good going, guys.
Yeah, they really dropped the ball there. Also, and I don't think it really needs to be said, but I'll just say it quickly because this is pretty much confirming our theory from before about the fact that the Illuminati are after demons with
some form of immortality.
Yeah. Immortality, because they're researching the immortality for the soul, or for the Demon King, or whatever.
For Lucifer.
Well, for Satan.
I said Demon King. I'm thinking of a different show. Yeah.
You mean all other Lucifers?
I was reading up about Frieren. I have not seen Frieren.
Oh, that show is amazing. Yes.
Yeah. But I keep seeing clips of it online, and I kind of do a little bit of Googling about the lore of the world, and I'm curious about it. And I know that they fought the Demon King, whatever. But yeah, Lucifer in this show is the Demon King, I guess.
Now, are they trying to resurrect Satan, though, to give him an immortal body?
Oh, Satan. Oh, you're right. No, they're giving it to Satan. Yeah, that's right.
Wait, I thought they were giving the immortal body to Lucifer.
No, I think they're giving Satan. I think Lucifer would benefit from the research, but they're aiming for the big immortal body for Satan.
Yeah, it's because Satan doesn't have a body. They need to make one for him, apparently.
I was getting mixed up with Lucifer's like sickness, and they're trying to also heal him or whatever.
Yeah, I think that Gedivan might have been doing that as well. Okay. But I think the ultimate goal is to get Satan to be...
I think on path to getting Satan the body, they could probably cure Lucifer of his dying disease. So,
yeah, or that Lucifer just being sick is just whatever. Like, it's just like, well, that's just, you know, whatever. What are you going to do? He serves Satan anyway. So, okay. Anyway. Yeah. And like, Crocodile says at the end, when, Mephisto kind of jokes about, you know, some stuff, Shura gets really mad about like being like, hey, you need to be careful with these Okumura brothers. Don't treat them like they're nothing. You know, I'm going to protect them. And he's like really kind of getting a jab in at her about them, like, oh, you really have changed. You really do care about other people now. And that's when she
flings the sword at him and cuts him in the cheek, which I thought was, whoa, that's pretty cool. Of course, Mephisto doesn't even flinch. I thought he was going to get mad in that moment, but he just sort of smiles. And then when she leaves the room, he kind of licks his
licks his own blood. Yeah. Very, very, very cool, Mephisto.
Yeah, very demon of him appropriate for him to do. I really did think, though, that her cutting him was going to be like, no, you don't get to do that kind of moment.
I think Mephisto's too cool of a cat. Like, I don't think I remember the last time we saw him, like, legitimately angry, right? When was that?
Oh, we've definitely seen him angry before. Yeah. That's why I was surprised he didn't get angry this time.
He doesn't get angry often, though. He always has, that jokey face.
But you cut him in the face.
Yeah.
That's why I was surprised. I'm like, she cut him in the face.
This is scratch.
Yeah, I'm sure he healed immediately. All right, anyway. I'm going to speed through some of this. So Bond and Light are researching the Illuminati. That's the gist of it. So they're going around, going in, looking for secret texts and blah, 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 blah.
And they're looking specifically for people who have left the Exorcists. Like,
correct.
For some reason. And they're trying to figure out what is going on here. Why are you leaving and what's going on?
Something in Mephisto's plan has gotten a bunch of previous Exorcists to leave, most likely working on something in secret. Is the idea here?
Weren't some of them kidnapped too? Or was that suggested, I think? Or
I don't remember.
We're
that.
Not sure. They disappeared? I mean, then Light also mentions that, like, this is, might be related to the Blue Knight, which is basically like the genesis of this series and how the Okumura brothers exist. And we don't, he even says, like, we don't really know what's up with this. And this is probably related. So we might be getting some lore drops soon.
I don't think even said probably. I think he said everything started on the Blue Knight. Like, he is certain of it.
Right.
That's why he's searching the archives under the Japan branch to try to find out information about the Blue Knight and stuff. They're going through books and stuff like that.
Light is trying to solve the plot here, like of the Exorcist, try to put it together.
He steps outside for a moment by himself, or he sends Bond back in to go get a book or something. And so then that's when Shima...
It's not that. He sends Bond back in to get his burgers.
Oh, right. His burgers. Yeah. Because he's eating burgers on the floor of the library.
I left my burgers. Go get them.
Anyway, that's when he's like, Shima, you can come out now. I know you're lurking nearby. And he's like, damn it. How did you know I was here? And he says, I put a secret spell on you, a demon fairy on you. So I know where you are at all times. And he's kind of jokes. Shima kind of jokes. He's like, damn it. You're taking all the fun out of me being a spy or something like that.
Yeah, he basically says, like, I have my eye on you. You have your eye on me. You know, I don't think really anything explicit comes out in this scene. They're just kind of like, we are looking, are observant of each other here. Don't make a sudden move type of thing.
Oh, his comment that Light, or I think Oshima makes a comment about just enjoying a spy life. And I think Lightning makes a common reply saying, you know, spies never like have happy endings, right? Die a horrible death. You know, that just comes with the job, right?
And I do think in that moment, Shima kind of has a brief realization of these, like, well, wait a minute. Uh-oh.
This is not the best way to pick up chicks. It's actually going to lead to my certain death. Ooh, I didn't think that went through.
Yeah, there was a joke in there about, I'm just doing it for the ladies. We cut back to the hospital. Everyone is there to meet with Yukio and give him well wishes and stuff. And then they leave the room, but unfortunately, everyone leaves, and then it just leaves Rin and Shammy walking out by themselves, and then they're standing in the hallway waiting for a moment, and it just gets really awkward, and we have this really wonderful scene here that I really love that really kind of takes up the rest of the episode of Rin and Shammy's relationship. It starts out with them having some awkward romantic banter. Shammy gets up the courage to kind of, like, try to finish what Rin started by talking about her feelings about him, but she's kind of lost and doesn't know what to say. Izumo comes running up behind and kind of saves Shimmy from this moment.
The way they phrase this is actually kind of amusing, where her friend, like Paku, basically says, like, wow, what kind of dump was that? Because they were, like, coming from the restroom.
Well,
it was like,
really
kind of weird. Yeah, like, that may not be exactly how they phrased it, but it was something like that. It's like,
but something dirty. Like, they were saying, like, man, you really left a stinker or something like that. And I'm like, what? Are these girls talking? I mean, I know what they're talking about, but that's surprising. I think it was just to get their attention.
I'm just so ridiculous.
Yeah, but they were, like, literally, like, raising their voice to try to, like, this is their entrance. Like, oh, okay, that's sure.
But yeah, Izumo is completely locked in here to about the fact that Shimmy is out of her depth when it comes to this and knows exactly what she needs help with. And so she suggests that they have a sleepover.
And this is actually kind of the first time we get to see Izumo and Shimmy like being like real friends for once. Mm-hmm. Shammy's been trying to be friends for a while, but this is, I think, the first time when they're like actually like actual friends with each other.
Like, Izumo's like receptive to that, as opposed to previous times where her reaction to Shimmy was like, "Go fucking die in the corner."
Yeah, this is a huge turnaround for Izumo's character. I mean, we knew this was happening for a while now since her arc, and like, yeah, this, we're seeing it now more than ever. She's a completely different outlook, and it's great.
We're gonna read some shoujo manga.
Yeah, so they come back from the commercial break, and yeah, Izumo, she's saying we're gonna study, thinking they're gonna study for tests, but she brings in all her shoujo romance manga, and she's like, you need to study this. You need to learn about what romance is.
I would say only in a manga would it be the suggestion to learn about romance by reading other manga, or an anime suggestion to learn about romance by watching other anime, like. Only in this context would anyone ever suggest.
I mean,
that.
I'm not a Japanese teenage girl, but I assume that
that may not be another guy in common, actually. I kind of wonder.
I did like, just very briefly, the first thing Izumo notices at Shami's house is that it's just a cute house.
Yeah.
She asks all Sundari, she's like, oh, this is also cute, the plants and flowers and whatnot.
Well, she had like pictures of their friends too, like.
Yeah, Shami did, which is actually a little bit awkward. Like, if I went to someone's house for the first time, like, wait, why do you have a framed picture of me? Anyway, but just the very first thing she said was she was looking at, like, the plant and did, like, a that's cute sort of face. And then noticed, like, you know, some of the pictures and whatnot.
Yeah. So Shami does study. She spends the rest of the night studying these manga and learns a lot.
And it does some, like, kind of cliche, stereotype, shoujo types of scenes, you know. Yeah. From what I assume,
there were these two characters, and I think they were voiced by the voice actors for Rin and Shimmy. They are like the characters she's reading about in the manga, you know, but it's, I think it has their voice actors, so it kind of is supposed to connect in your mind that she's seeing herself and Rin in these moments.
I mean, the characters kind of looked like not Rin and not Shimmy, so
kind of, yeah,
but it's obviously like very exaggerated, you know, yeah, shoujo, yeah. Tropey. But that's how they're learning about romance.
Yeah, like a black haired guy, but he's like way taller than Rin and slender, and he's got like a suit on, you know, like, yeah, same. But she's getting it. She's learning. And that's while she's doing that, Izumo goes out and has a talk with Shimmy's mom. And that's when she kind of learns, a little bit more about where Shimmy comes from and how her mom feels about her. And stuff. It's a nice scene. I don't know. It's not super memorable, but it's nice.
And I guess the things to talk about, Yukio mentioned to Shami in the hospital, like, basically, like, kind of like, are you sure you want to be an exorcist? And then Izumo's talking to Shami's mother about, like, is this something you want her to do or not, kind of thing, like, you know. And there's whole through line in this episode about, like, what does Shami want to do here, not just with her romance, but also with, like, does she want to be an exorcist, does she want to do the exam or not? And then we get a dream sequence here with Shami.
Yes, it's pretty funny at first. Okay, I knew right away it must have been a dream sequence, but it's really cute. There's like a little world. It's kind of like Little Big Planet, a little world of garden, a garden world. And then we see like Shimmy's, like the top half of her head kind of pop out like she's a plant. She's got a little thing on top, a little flower on top of her head.
Yeah, it's like an angelic, honestly.
Yeah, and she's very cute looking, like super, super cute looking. And she's like, I'm in my perfect little garden world and everything is great. And I just love my little garden world. And then I think Yukio appears and she starts to fall for him. He's like, oh, I want to be close to Yukio. But then Yukio leaves. And then she sees a vision of Rin, and Rin is like, come on out of there. And then yanks her by her like stem and like pulls her out like a weed. And then he's like, you need to come out of your garden. So it's all metaphorical, of course.
Yeah. Symbolism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like she like says she wants to leave the garden, but she's too comfortable in it, so to speak. So it's just like the outer world looks appealing, but it's not for me. I'm happy here. But then just meeting and interacting with Yukio and Rin makes her want to come out of her shell, so to speak, come out of her garden. And of course, the rest of the friend group are there as well, just kind of encourage her, like, you know, come out of your shell. Come, you know, it's the water is nice over here, yada, 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 and so on.
Yeah. She's getting unrooted from her garden.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked this sequence. Also, before I have, before I forget, I also want to mention too, like, I know we've talked a little bit in the past about the redesigns for season two and stuff, or season three, I guess, whatever. Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, especially the scene when Izumo and like Shimmy were sitting down at the table and getting ready to read the shoujo manga and stuff. I really like the character designs now. I think I like them way more than I did the earlier ones. They've totally grown on me. I think that like the characters look much cuter. The girl characters, so they look a lot cuter than they did before. And I don't know, it just really stuck out to me. And this scene especially, I was like, oh man, like they. The way they draw these Shimmy now is just like in her face. She's just so much more cute than she used to be. And I like that. Yeah, like
Izumo looks mostly the same. Her hair is a little different now, but Shimmy's definitely gone through more of a change. I remember back in the very first season of Blue Exorcist, we actually called Shimmy like Moe Blob. Because it was like overdone, and like her face shape was just kind of weird. Like it was trying to be like kind of cute, but it was just kind of blobby. So we called her Moe Blob. And now it's like, okay, now she just looks like, you know, it's a little bit jarring when you first see her new design in season three. But I think it's kind of grown on me. Like, yeah, I overall prefer this to her older, to her earlier.
Yeah. Book.
It was jarring at first. And it seems like now in season four here, it seems like it's settled in.
Yeah.
I think I like her first design a little more, but this one's definitely fine and does its job. So
fair enough.
I can't really complain, but
I'm definitely in the camp that I think she looks better now. Like I said, I think it's just, she just looks way cuter. I don't know. Just in the face particularly. She just like really has like the way her face features are, it's just much more, I don't want to say youthful, but she just looks like prettier. I don't know. The next day, she runs into Rin and the group back in the hallways of the school. And that's when she decides to just come out and to Rin and be like, I'm ready to talk to you about our relationship. And everybody runs off because they don't want to interfere. But she ends up turning him down.
And you can see Rin is just devastated. Like, he's like, oh, well, I want to die. Like, this dandy, suicidal dandy. That's Rin now.
Yeah, and she kind of pulls what, like, the main character of Fully Cooly Alternative did with, like, the crush there. Which is kind of like, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
You know, for a relationship. And she wants to focus on, like, the Exorcist thing right now. And honestly, she's been, like, so sheltered her whole life. Like, it makes sense. Like, you know, she's still adjusting to this, like, society and being social and school and whatnot. So, yeah. Obviously, that's not exactly what Rin wanted to hear, but makes sense to me.
I think that's what that scene with Jimmy's mom was kind of getting us to, is that realization that she's just not ready for this.
I mean, it's kind of mature on her part, just be not to, like, force anything, but be like, this is where I'm at. Let me just be upfront with you, Rin, because I know you're feeling your ways. And so let me just, like, yeah, it's obviously not, as a guy, like, you don't want to be in that situation, but it is the most, like, if she's not feeling it, it is better for her to be like, I still like you. I still want to be friends, but I'm not feeling that or feeling it that way. So let's not do that, at least not now. And so, like,
it felt very much like, let's put this on pause. Give me some time and put this on pause. And I think that's reinforced with what happens next when, out of nowhere, a Maimon shows up, come walking down the hall with his goofy green hair.
Yeah, this was kind of surprising to me. My very first thought was, wait, this guy is just at the school now? Like, how long has that been the case? Did I miss something? But then, like, shortly after, basically all the characters were asking the same thing. Like, why is Amaimon just in a student outfit and just at the school now? Like, oh, okay, it's not just me. Even the characters in the show are, like, confused at his presence here. He's just, like,
but there's some people who watched the first season and then, like, got confused because Amaimon died in the first season. It was filler, but I could still see how they could leave an impression on you. Like,
remember
wait
that.
A minute, is this guy dead? Until you realize, oh, wait, that didn't count, but it is very awkward.
Yeah, so basically, Mephisto basically told Amaimon to come and be at the school in order to kind of keep an eye on him and stuff. But he tries to pick a fight, and he gets all up in Rin's face, and he's about to attack.
He actually, like, tries to claim Shimmy also.
Oh, yeah, he's so, like, what are you doing with my wife? I mean, I think he literally says something effective like, you remember when I claimed her, right? When I was taking her, she's mine. What are you doing?
Yeah, I think that was actually still canon when he did that. Yeah, just before I went to Filler Hell.
I'm actually glad they did a slight flashback there because I'm like, that was several seasons ago and I actually did not remember.
I did remember that actually. And then I was kind of brought back and I thought, oh, that's kind of, that's dark of him to say that because he did, because that was like, he was really he was close to molesting her in that moment and like straight up, like, remember he was mind controlling her and stuff? It was like pretty dark. And he gets all up in Rin's face. He's like, what you going to do about it? And blah, 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 blah. And then that's when Shiemi steps up and knocks Amaimon down on his ass. And it's like, you don't hurt my friend Rin. You don't do that.
And this is when she declares that she is going to try to be an exorcist. Like she's made her decision.
It's like, I have to defend my friends, including especially Rin. And so you step off and he walks away disgruntled. And that's kind of like the end of the episode. And yes, friend zone confirmed. Rin is in the friend zone now. They both are, I guess, technically.
Rin put up a mature face to Shiemi when this was happening. And even like said, like, we're still friends, right? Type of thing, blah, blah, blah. But of course, as soon as she leaves, maybe kind of jokingly, he like starts hugging. Yeah, he actually hugs Konokomaru. Like, I'm upset now.
Yeah.
But I think overall, like his presence, his reaction to her directly was, you know, actually fairly mature outwardly.
I didn't mind any of this. This doesn't feel overly tropey to me. This felt very like well done. I'm going to be kind of blunt. I feel like this all is just very much the author being like, we're not going to have the romance until the end of the series. So just this is how I'm going to fix that.
This kind is of a situation. Stone.
Like it's there. They are, quote unquote, in a relationship, but we're not doing any of that now.
This is a much better base than most, I feel, shonen romance. This becomes a romance in the end, this is at least a lot better set up than a lot of other series.
Agreed.
This is better than just having it come out of nowhere later, right?
Or the opposite, where it's an on and off thing constantly, or like, you know, they're always on the edge. I mean, that works in certain romance shows, but this isn't that, so...
And it also, I think, helps to actually give Shiemi like a little bit of her own like actual character too, other than just being, you know, just being the girl, right?
The damsel, so. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, you could tell, like, I think other people in the thread have made this joke, but you can tell this is canon because like the female characters actually get character development and have some agency and have some of the plot narrative devoted to their interests and whatnot.
Now, the very, very end of this episode, first of all, like, Bon is talking to Light and even mentions like to him, Amaimon showed up and blah 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 blah, and Light comments something like, what is Mephisto up to, right? And then they basically approach some like the monastery where the Okumura brothers grew up, and they're looking for like those former exorcists from earlier. So that's, well, I'm assuming we'll see what goes on with that in the next episode.
Yeah. All right, and then that's it for this episode of Blue Exorcist. I think it was a pretty good one. Again, I honestly don't think when they brought Blue Exorcist back, I never would have assumed that we would be getting shows about Izumo and Shiemi that I thought were well-made, and we are. And I'm kind of like surprised by that. I'm just like, oh. Because it's so tropey and typical of shonen authors to kind of not give their female characters much going on, but they have in this show. So I'm giving them props for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to Mashal. Mashal Season 2, Episode 6, Mash Burn Dead, and You Look, You Lose Your Life. Okay, so episode starts out and we see Margaret Macaron defeating a couple of scrubs. They try to put up a little bit of fight, but Margaret is way too powerful.
I think it's weird how one of them summons a wolf and the other one summons like walls, and then they fuse their attack into like a wall made out of wolves or something. Did I remember that correctly?
That's basically what happened, yeah.
Yeah, pretty strange. And I guess I didn't realize this is like the rules of this exam. Like, because Margaret takes out these two people and that like wipes out that red team, the exam is over. So I think I mentioned in the previous episode of the podcast, you know, what are they going to do with Lance being on another team versus, you know, MASH and Dot and Finn. And like, oh, I guess that didn't even matter because they didn't have to.
Right.
Into conflict.
It wasn't like a last team standing, which is what I thought.
Right. That's what I thought. But no, it's just because one team was eliminated, the other two teams go on. So they didn't even have to come into conflict. Like, oh, okay.
I should have seen that because that's how they did the last one, too. So anyway. All right. Meanwhile, we see Wahlberg kind of watching and kind of, you know, talking with this other guy, another divine visionary guy with the white hair.
Caldo.
Yeah. And they're kind of just talking about MASH and talking about the situation and stuff. We do briefly learn here that this guy is kind of over the, like, the he oversees who gets accepted to the
oversees
Natural Rules Committee or something.
Yeah, he's like who gets to move on to like potentially be a divine visionary.
Okay,
so he has some sort of like operation there, I guess.
Then we get a really goofy scene where it's like MASH sitting on a bench. There's a spotlight on him, and he gives a philosophy lesson on dumbbells. It's like he's trying to be real deep. He's like, dumbbells are life or something. I don't even remember what he said.
I think he was like, man involved hands and arms so he could hold dumbbells, I think is what he said, or something of the sort.
And this episode, more than other episodes, had like some of these like non sequitur scenes. Like you have your mention in your notes here, like Lemon rejects Dot, and there's just kind of like this random scene where Dot and Lemon, there's like Dot's just like, they're kind of like, I don't know, they do the pose that's like the La La Land pose.
It's like a reality
pose.
Show interview, but like not really at the same time.
Yeah.
To me, it just seemed like an excuse to let Lemon do something. Otherwise, she would be doing nothing this entire arc. So,
but Dot basically says like, go out with me. And Lemon is like, no. And they're like doing it like kind of sing-songy.
Right. But it's like so MASH does his philosophy thing. And then it cuts to Lemon doing the same thing about like, am I only about the girl who chases guys or something to that effect.
I mean, stalker, I think she's the term she uses.
I'm not just a stalker. And then do I only exist to stalk or something like that? And then that's when Dot asks her out and she's like, no. And they laugh and joke. And that's when we kind of see that they're in like their break room, like that their team is in their team break room, so to speak.
But I'm trying to remember something here. Did they do like a pose that reminded me of like La La Land, like the La La Land?
Well, they took a pose. It's a pose we've seen in the opening.
Oh, it is in the opening?
It was in the opening, that exact pose, because I recognized it. Yeah. I guess that must have been a panel from the manga.
I think Finn is just remarking himself that he's just surrounded by lunatics and idiots. Yeah, Finn being sure. A stray man, of course. So.
And so, yeah, then the white-haired guy called Caldo Gehenna comes walking in, and he says, you know, he's interested in MASH. Yet another divine visionary who finds MASH not as, like, someone to be killed, but a curious interest. Somebody he's interested in seeing what they can do. So he offers MASH if he wants to play a game. And if he wins the game, he would automatically move on past the next exam. He wouldn't even have to compete. That's when we get the commercial break. So they come back and he says, we're going to play a game. And it's called You Look, You Lose. Now, I'm going to be honest right here. I don't understand the rules of this game.
I mean, the rules basically are that Caldo is going to keep striking at Marshall to make him look in a particular direction. Like Caldo says, you cannot look in this direction, and then he's going to strike at Marshall to try to force him to physically look in that direction, and Marshall does everything in his power to not do so. That means like blind blocking and blind jumping a bunch of strikes and attacks.
Okay. So it's like basically he's pointing in it, but MASH can't look in the direction he points?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I see that Seda has posted that image.
I don't know if my point was coming across. Like, they did the La La Land pose. I don't know why. They just did. Or it's
I'm
close
looking for
enough.
That same. I'm looking for that. There it is. Okay, I found it. Here's the same shot in the opening.
Oh, I didn't even realize it was in the opening.
Yeah, I remember that. When they did that, I'm like, oh, that's from the opening. But, you know, I didn't know it was a La La Land
thing. Well, I don't know if it's exactly the same, but it's close enough.
It's
pretty close.
Close.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. I don't know if that's an intentional... you know, I don't know.
I think it is. It's got to be. Look how similar it is. Like, their legs are in the exact same positions.
Okay.
Huh. All right. Anyway. So, yeah, he starts to do the game, and MASH is, he does pretty well at first. Like, he's, like, you know, he's, Kaldo's trying to do some tricks on him, but Mash is, you know, using his super strength to kind of get around that. Then Kaldo pulls out his sword and he goes to strike Mash. And in the situation, basically, Mash couldn't move his feet. Otherwise, he would get struck or he would lose the game. So Mash literally digs his feet into the concrete and just like flings his feet and the concrete up into the air so that he's literally hasn't moved outside the circle that he's standing in because he brought the circle with him into the air.
Right. Kaldo makes a big point of how his sword is like has like the black flame from Mangekyo Sharingan, basically. So Mashal has been blocking most of the previous attacks. This now attack Mashal cannot block. And then he points in like three different directions. So aim is that you can't block, you can't look in any direction, you can't dodge. Oh wait, he's Mashal. Of course he can dodge. Fuck you.
Yeah.
I also found it a little bit strange how quickly everyone else accepted this guy just has a sword. Like, he's got a sword. Not a wand, but sword.
You have to carry a sword on his hilt, like you saw it beforehand.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like he has a sword. Like, he's the only... I know some of the other wands become, like, sword-ish, or, like, they change form, but this guy is just, like, carrying a sword.
It is a little strange. I thought the same thing, honestly, Seda, because I was like, why do they need swords? They got wands. They got magic. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the magic sword.
Yeah. On the same wavelength there. Okay, anyway.
And we know, like, Rain has a magic that just can make a bunch of swords.
Yeah, I think that's just magic, though. Like, right. Anyway, basically, in that moment, at the final moment, Mash loses. And he admits as much. He's like, well, you got me. You won. And then Kaldo's like, well, actually, let's just make it a draw.
Didn't a bird fly in and then that distracted Mashal? And then like Kaldo's like, yeah, that doesn't count.
Stole his cream puff.
It's just a random little like miniature owl just comes in and steals a cream puff.
And that's why he lost.
This episode feels like more like Mashal has always been a really goofy, jokey comedy show, but this episode felt just like a bunch of random scenes and random things more so than most.
This is definitely the episode out of all the episodes. I'm even talking season one. This feels like the one episode that I've seen of all of them that is trying the most to be funny. I don't know. It just seems like it's always trying to pull a gag.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, he's like, you're right. I forgot about the owl. When the little owl comes in and takes his cream puff, that's why Mash looks in that direction and he loses. But then, like I said, Kaldo is like, no, let's make it a draw. Because here's the thing. I want to see what you do. And you know what? And he kind of leaves the room kind of being along the same lines as someone else who was like, I think you are interesting and let's see what you do with the world. Let's see how the world reacts to this non-magical person becoming a visionary. I think that would be interesting. We go back to the stadium. Everyone's there. And we learn that the final exams are going to be one-on-one battles. And of course, it's going to be Mash versus Margaret. And we get a little sequence here where we learn all about how incredible Margaret is, that he could have been a divine, or he could have competed to be a divine visionary last year and just decided not to. He's just super powerful.
Yep.
Before the match actually starts, Mash decides he's going to eat a whole bunch of cream puffs to get his energy back. Got to get my sugar in or something, he says. Got to get my energy back. And then Margaret pulls out a fried shrimp and some dipping sauce and does this really goofy animation where he's dipping it at like super speed. He's like dip, 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 like that, like overly dipping it.
And I actually forgot that when we were introduced to this character, he was also eating like tartar sauce.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was eating that. That's what he's eating with Nakara back in the a while back. A
couple episodes ago. And yeah, he even mentions, like Mash even says something like that's too much tartar sauce or whatever. And Margaret kind of says like the obvious thing. He's like, I only have shrimp so I can have tartar sauce. Like I'm having shrimp with my tartar sauce. Yes. Like he's just obsessed with tartar sauce. Like, okay, that's a character quirk, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, you know what? In a show about a character who wants to eat nothing but cream puffs, we got to have at least another character who has a food fetish, right? So this is his, I guess, particular favorite food is tartar sauce. Oh, by the way, I will say that the show has been very consistent about not giving Margaret a particular program.
Yeah, they're non-binary.
Yeah, they very much say they. And they did it like a lot in this episode.
from my perspective, they like appear masculine, like that's how they present themselves. So sometimes you just he slips out of, you know.
I have to do that too. I mean, and again, it's no disrespect. It's a fictional character anyway, but no disrespect to anybody. But like, yeah. I just wanted to mention this because I was surprised how faithful the adaptation is trying to be to this. I'm sure in the Japanese version, they probably do this thing that they often do with characters where they don't want to identify the gender, because in Japanese, it's very simple to not have to use pronouns. Like you can just get away with that for free. But in our English language, it's much harder. And what they decided to do in the dub here is they just use they.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, the fight's on. They do some crazy magic or they do some crazy fighting. But Mash uses a big move towards the end here. He grabs Margaret and lifts them up into the air super, super high, like jumps like, I don't know, like 200 feet into the air.
Some are Rockley, a tear is running down Rockley's face.
Yes, exactly. And like grabs him and does like a wrestling move. He's going to do like a backbreaker, and he comes back down and he calls it spine magic, hell fall. He calls out his magic move, quote unquote magic move, and then like slams Margaret into the stadium, creating like a big earth shattering like earthquake. Everyone's shocked. But more shockingly, Margaret just gets back up. And they're like, all right. That was pretty good. Let's keep going.
Got a rematch.
And then that's the end of the episode. So the fight is not over.
It's just begun, Ed.
I wonder if we're going to get other fights, though. It's odd that we're starting off with Mash. I thought we were going to get like a, you know.
Oh, like Lance and Dog.
Well, yeah, or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I could just answer the question, but I think you just wait and you'll see, but.
Out of our non-MASH characters, Lance is by far what we've seen. Not a whole lot, but he's like the most capable. He's got two lines, right? So I know Dot has like fire magic and beat like one plant dude early on. I don't think he's supposed to be like super powerful at all. And then Finn feels like, I don't know what he can do.
Yeah.
Finn does the displacement magic, I guess, with the swapping places.
Yeah, but can he like, can he put up a fight though? He doesn't seem like the type of character who would. So. Like, Lance seems like the type of person who could hold his own. Like,
Lance is not MASH. Quite strong. We've seen that.
Right, just... yes. He's the only other character who I would say is, like, I don't know if Dot is strong, and Finn is definitely doesn't come
Dot is, like, strong, but also very stupid, which tempers his strength a little bit. Like, we've seen him put up a fight. And...
Yeah, I remember he's got, like, fire magic, and he fought, like, a plant dude at some point. I don't know. But I was also thinking what Seacoler was thinking, like, oh, I guess we're starting with Mash. Are we going to see the other ones even fight at all? Or I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning whether we probably won't, but we'll just have to wait and see. All right. So that's it for Mashal. Definitely going for the comedy. I like that we have one show on the block that is meant to be a comedy. Because, you know, we have so many shows that are more dramatic, especially Bleach. So... having a comedy show is nice, lightens the mood.
Yeah, I agree. Just, you don't have to think too hard. Don't think about it too hard.
And I want to be clear too, like Mashal isn't like laugh out loud funny, but it's funny enough that I chuckle and I'm like, you know.
Yeah, we acknowledge that it's honestly a pretty stupid show, but it's also just kind of fun, and it is what it is.
I feel like the fact that it doesn't take itself too seriously helps a lot. So, all right. Let's move on to the final show of the block, One Piece. One Piece, episode 756. Start the counterattack. Great moves by the Twirly Hat crew. What
does that mean?
I have no freaking idea.
Is that the right episode title? That can't be right. That can't be the right episode title.
No, it wasn't the episode about the leader who's like now sick now or something, who woke up.
What counterattack?
Like, I'm looking here.
This can't be the right episode.
No, this is definitely the right episode.
Huh.
This is it. I don't know who the Twirly Hat crew is supposed to be.
But well, also, like,
it must be obvious.
We're not. There isn't a counterattack either. Not really.
Oh, no. I get it. I know what it is. I got it. I don't know why it's Twirly Hat. But they're talking about the fight that Sanji led against the Great Mom or the Big Mom
in
pirates.
The flashback.
Oh, right. Those guys.
Yeah. But why do they call it the Twirly Hat? It's the Twirly. It's the Twirly Eyebrow.
Okay. Oh. Huh. Weird.
I don't know why hat. Oh, I get it. It's a combination of instead of straw hat, it's twirly hat.
Oh, because Sanji's like taking charge right now because Luffy's not there.
Exactly. That's it. We figured it out. That's got to be what it means. Okay. Now that we've got that past, let's move on. We're cut back to Kanjuro and Kinemon, and they're still trying to climb up with the cat drawing. And unfortunately, they look at it, and this thing has been like, since it got hit by the seawater, it's like messed up. It's blurred. That's like smeared, and it looks horrible, and it's like moaning in pain, and it can't climb. So they keep sliding back down, and they look over, and they see they're right next to the Thousand Sunny. And so they're like, all right, let's just quit for today. Let's get onto the ship, and we'll just try again tomorrow.
Oh, because the sun was setting, right? And they didn't want to go during the night, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. But also that they had fallen all the way back down to the sea level. So they're like, there's a ship right there. Well, let's just take a break. Also, the Kanjuro gave that cat a name. He called it Nekozayomon. But yeah, Nekozayomon looking pretty bad here.
He's on his last of 9 lives. He's hanging by a thread.
This thing probably never had 9 lives. It's like so poorly drawn. All right, well, we cut back to the dukedom, and we see that the minks are holding a big feast for the Straw Hats, and everybody's eating. Luffy's chowing down on meat and everything. I think there was an interesting bit here about, like, I don't know, Carrot or somebody was explaining, it's like, oh, what's this? Oh, we're having a fried lizard. And they say, obviously, we don't eat things with fur, but we'll eat other things. And that's when Brook comes running in. Here's Brook. He's like, oh, my God. Comes running in crazy, and he's surprised to see everybody there, and his clothes are all tattered, and he runs up and he's like, Straw Hats, come over here, I gotta tell you something. And I think somebody asks, like, where's Momo? And Brooke just like vaguely says, well, Momo doesn't really like the minks, he's somewhere else right now.
He locked up in his room, he said, or something of the sort.
He's somewhere, yeah. And then he says, also, by the way, don't mention Wano or Samurai around the minks. Super important. Don't say that. And they're like, why? And he's like, just trust me.
This seems related to why, like, the monkey told the samurai to get lost when he goes falling down the back of the elephant.
Very much so. Yes, I agree. That's a good eye I think you've got there. I kind of forgot that happened.
Yeah, so for some reason, the minks do not like the samurai people, and I guess Momo is reciprocating that for some reason.
I mean, aren't the beast pirates from Wano, so isn't that part of the reason why you wouldn't like anyone from Wano, potentially?
I don't quite remember. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things, I don't know if I know that or if that's through osmosis or I don't know. What I'm gathering here is that there's some animosity between the minks and the Wano people.
And after he says this, suddenly a whole bunch of dog minks come rushing through the door, and they're all salivating. And this is, we now learn, this is the reason that Brook has been on the run, because as the minks affectionately call him, or the corpse baron, they think he's just amazing. Oh my God, he's so amazing. I just want to nibble on him. And so all the dogs are basically jumping on Brook and trying to bite him because he's made of bones. And even Wanda can't resist salivating a little bit at the sight of Brook.
And I think this is where Usopp and the others realize when you're referring to a corpse, you're referring to Brook, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's when, like, Usopp put the obvious together. It's like, oh, yeah, he's the corpse. You were right, like, 2 episodes ago when you were like, why didn't he figure that out?
Yeah, seemed like you have a skeleton on your crew. Like, you should know this. Like,
yeah. Well, you didn't, I guess. And then Nami says, I guess I better catch you up. Or somebody asks, like, Nami, catch us up on what's going on. And she's like, all right, let me give you a backstory of what's been going on. And she says, this is what's been happening in the last 11 days since we left Dressrosa. And I was like, what? It's only been 11 days? I know Dressrosa is long, but holy crap.
No, when you think about it, it makes sense
that, you know, there weren't like that many day breaks during that arc.
Yeah,
it feels like they were in Dressrosa for 2 months.
But yeah, like a lot of those episodes, there might be like a 40 episode stretch that might all happen in like a day or two.
A day. Yeah, you're right. It was just a shock. I was just like, 11 days. My gosh. Yeah.
Something that stood out to me in this sequence, like at the end of last episode, Nan was like, Sanji, it's Sanji. He's gone. And she was kind of speaking like
he had died
or something. The way she was talking, the way like her mannerisms and everything. And we cut to this episode and it's like, Luffy was like, okay, so Sanji's not dead. Tell me what the deal is. And so it's like that clarification happened off screen. And I was like, I noticed. I was like, oh, okay. Like, girl, why are you acting like the boy died? Like,
just,
I don't know. That feels weird. That I'm glad that was clarified, but it felt weird that happened off screen. But maybe that was just me. I don't know. But
we'll learn more about that in the future. And I don't know if like her crying is over the top or not, but it's certainly a big deal. So you'll see. Yeah. So anyway, we cut back to this when right before Luffy and everybody separated from them, that's when they were being chased by Big Mom's ship, the singing ship. They gave the name in the subtitles, but I forgot. It was called the Great Chantier or something like that. But anyway, yeah, Big Mom's ship's a giant ship that sings, and it just says ship, 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 ship.
So do they explain why a ship is able to sing at any point?
Are you asking me if they do or if they did?
If they do.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm just curious.
Yes.
Okay. I assume it must be some Dilfer power or something, or someone, right? That the only thing that could make sense.
I'm not going to tell you anything more. I'm just going to say you will learn everything that needs to be known. You're seeing a tease through Big Mom's ship here. You're seeing a tease of Whole Cake Island.
The ship ate the Sing Sing fruit.
We will see. But yes, Big Mom's ship is singing and it's chasing them. And we learned that they're after Caesar. Remember, they want to get Caesar back.
And to kill him, right? Isn't the implication that they're going to murder Caesar?
I don't know. I don't remember that.
Well, Caesar is the one who helps make the false devil fruits.
The smile fruit, yeah.
Yeah, so like he's like got that know-how and knowledge. And I mean, I guess his factory has been all destroyed.
I don't know. I feel like the way Caesar was acting and talking, he was like afraid they were going to murder him or something.
He
was afraid of that, but at the same time, I think they're just trying to get him. Yeah. And those, in particular, the people who are trying to get him are Peckham's Baron Tamago and, surprisingly, Capone Gang Beji. Now, Peckham's and Baron Tamago, we saw them at the end of Fishman Island. They showed up briefly.
And they were always with Big Mom, right?
Yes, they've always been part of Big Mom's pirate crew.
But the other guy...
No. Yeah, Capone Gang Beji is a Worst Generation member. Now, we've seen him, of course, since back in Sabaody. But real briefly, before I talk about him, I just want to mention that Peckham's is a mink. Well, anyway, I don't know if that's important. But regardless, I just wanted to point that out. Peckham's is a mink, obviously. Baron Tamago is just a weird Ed guy.
Like, are we to assume that all mammalian, animal people in the One Piece world are minks, basically?
Well, I think you asked this question last episode. And I said that, or maybe it was Seda. I forget.
I wasn't here for One Piece last episode, so.
Okay, I forget. Well, anyway, somebody asked this question before, and I said it's not clear, and that Chopper's not a mink because he ate the fruit.
Well, yeah, Chopper's a reindeer. Merry is a human with like horns.
But at the end of the day, probably yes, probably. But we haven't seen that many minks. We saw Beppo. He was like probably the first mink we've saw.
We've seen a handful of humans who have eaten a devil fruit with like an animal characteristic, but that doesn't make a mink.
That's different.
That's a little different thing, though.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like those people don't count.
Yeah. The minks are a literal like different race.
Right.
Like giants or like fishmen. Anyway, yeah. Peckham's is one. And then like I said, Capone Beji is here and he is now working under the Big Mom Pirates. That's really all there's to say. We learn a lot more about this later, but he's with them.
Yeah, I remember that was surprising to me. I'm like, wait, we didn't know that, right? Like, that no. This guy was with them. So
it's a new thing that he's apparently partnered up with them. Okay, that's when they get the commercial break. When we come back, we get a big, long fight sequence where the Straw Hats defend themselves against the Big Mom Pirates. you guys are free to say anything you want about this. It's just a generic battle for the most part. I mean, I think they kicked the ship or something.
So I'm curious, like, Caesar has the sea stone handcuffs on him to deactivate his Delphu powers. But in this episode, they use him like his body is made out of gas still, though.
Yeah. Here's something I do know about devil fruits, only, and not in a way that's been explained, but something that's been consistent, is that people with like paramecia fruits or whatever, or even like people with the animal kind, if they get put into the ocean or they get the sea stone handcuffs on them, they don't like revert. Like Chopper doesn't become a normal reindeer when he falls into the ocean. So there's like rules about like their transformation, their body not changing.
So Caesar's Logia though, but I guess that rule still applies.
But the point being is that he doesn't just turn into a solid human just because he's in water or has sea stone handcuffs on them. I just think it means he can't control it at that point any more than like Chopper stops becoming part humanoid. He doesn't just revert to being a normal non-speaking reindeer just because he gets wet. That kind of thing.
All right. Fair enough. Okay.
Somewhat related, I realized in like the last episode, two episodes ago, the elephant sprays salt water everywhere, and then like Robin actually tastes it and like, this is salt water. Like, what does salt water taste to a devil fruit user? Does it taste like acid?
I think it just tastes like salt, but it probably makes her a little weak.
I'm kind of joking. Like, it's not like salt water tastes good, but does it taste like battery acid to a devil
fruit user?
Well,
it's not that they get splashed from salt water and you start melting. It's just if they get submerged in it,
I'm mostly joking.
He's mostly joking here. I get it. Yeah, it's just like the joke is it should taste bad to them.
Like especially bad to a devil fruit user.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think salt water tastes bad to everyone because it's salt water.
But especially bad to Robin.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't see very often Robin interacting with salt water. It should happen more often, but I think it's happened once or twice maybe, but probably happened at one point in Fishman Island. I don't remember. Anyway, then we cut back to the present. Again, the Straw Hats get away. That's the point. And I think there was a funny reaction shot with the ship where like it got kicked and it like looked at Sanji with a goofy face. Anyway, cut back to the present. And this is when Wanda kind of steps up and she explains that the Minx were almost wiped out, but it was the Straw Hats who were helping to save them, which is why they revere them so much. And then in comes running the squirrel or something. Some guy like pops his head down, another Minx. He's like, Wanda, great news, great news. Duke Dogstorm is awake. And everybody cheers like, yo, we got to go see Duke Dogstorm. And I think Wanda or Carrot, one of the two, like explains, is like, yeah, so Duke Dogstorm is the ruler of our country. He's the ruler of the Mokadome Kingdom, but he's called the King of the Day. We actually have two leaders. We have the King of the Day and the King of the Night. And I think he gave the name. Did he give the name of the other one? I don't remember.
Wanda named them both, but I don't remember the names off
top. Yeah, the name was like, I think the other one's name is, I can't remember now. And the little guy says that Duke Dogstorm wants to meet the Straw Hats. He's awake now. And then we learn that, I guess, Chopper had been helping Duke Dogstorm recover from he was like in a coma. And he was helping him with his doctoring skills. Yeah, and that's basically it. And they're all going off to go meet with this Dogstorm character. And that's where the episode ends.
I remember a bunch of like freeze frames and like long pans and everyone's staring at each other as they like try to stretch out the last 60 seconds of the episode.
Yeah, that was poorly paced. I think that the One Piece anime is probably next year going to start to get much better when they go into the seasonal pacing.
Oh, you mean Japan? Okay, I was like...
In Japan, Japan.
Yeah. I was like, wait, isn't it still shitty for like even... I hear like Wano gets really well animated, but still the pacing is crap or something. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's no better than anything because they do like one chapter or a 3/4 of a chapter per episode. That's why it's so bad. But yeah, next year in Japan, they're going to the first time change it and it's going to go to seasonal. So they'll be able to... They like straight up said that. Like, I think the production company said that the pacing is going to be much better or something like that. They said it in a very, like, corporate-y way where they're like, this will give our team more time to have better...
They don't want to admit the pacing for the past, like, 10 years has been absolute dog shit. So, like, just...
Yeah, I guess it finally made it financially relevant for them to fix it. Or maybe Oda was just sick of their terrible pacing.
I guess they just realized every other shonen had translated to the season and model successfully, yeah. So they might as well join the club.
Yeah.
I might have said this on a previous podcast. I think I did. Like, if you're an animator working on One Piece, you see all these other shows going seasonal. I bet, like, for morale, just like, hey, why are we the only ones who aren't doing this? Like, over time, it wasn't sustainable.
One of the big changes that also happened during Wano is they started to invite other animators to come in and do sequences and episodes to kind of mix things up, which is another reason why the Wano was kind of the beginning of like the animation being amazing. And again, I want to be clear. Everybody says like the animation gets really good in Wano, and it does, but it's still like highs and lows. Like it's still there are episodes where like it looks better than it does now, but it's still low.
It never gets to Dressrosa low though. That was like nadir.
The whole art style changes when they get to Wano. But the big thing is that like sometimes animation just looks passing. But then you will get sequences where they've had a guest animator come in and like not even somebody who normally would work at Toei. Like they bring in other animators from like even like some American animators from times who are big One Piece fans come in and animate sequences or come to work at Toei to do these sequences. And that's when like when they started doing that, it's just like suddenly it was like, holy crap. And then they got that one woman to come in and animate and direct some episodes. And she, I forget her name, but like she's incredible. Like she's like, to me, one of the best animators in Japan. And she just comes in and like blows it away. Like it's insane. She ends up doing like four of the new openings that come out after that. And every one of them is an incredible opening, like some of the best openings ever. You have a lot to look forward to in Wano. Unfortunately, it's going to take for us forever to get there. So
what's her name again?
Ishitani, I think is her name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't work on Super 2. Maybe that's when she was starting out or something. Or I think it's someone else.
I don't. Maybe she did. I don't remember. Yeah, Megumi Ishitani. She also did the One Piece fan letter that you've heard a lot about. That was her.
Okay.
So yeah, she's just like, just incredible animator. Incredible. All right. Anyway, we're getting off topic here. That's the it for One Piece this week. We're going to go learn about the leaders of the Minx.
Minx don't really have a good concept of personal space, do they?
No, they do not. They very much want to get close to you. Okay. So that's it for the rundown. Do we have anything we want to mention as far as a flavor alert?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Best ability, spine magic, helpful.
I wish it was more effective.
Yeah, I'm joking.
Is Gehenna, like Kaldo's last name is pretty like, they knew what they were doing. Is that name worth anything or is it too low, like low bar for given the names that Mashal tends to give us?
It's not on the same tier as some of the other Mashal names.
Like Brad Bradson or something. What was that guy's?
The list. If you look at the list, there's some good ones on there. I think Brad was last year.
Yeah he was. But I just remember. Yeah.
I think this year we even have some. Let me look real quick here.
We have Cell War, Abyss Razor.
Cell War.
That was the first season, but we added Bless Minister.
Like those are way better.
Yoko Fritted Bless Minister. Bless Minister. And his minister skills.
Yeah.
The only one who was able to save Master from getting executed, the real peacemaker in the series.
I mean, I don't know. Nothing like where these categories are hard sometimes. I'm trying to think of moments and it's always tough.
Yeah, I'm going through the episodes. Was anything really special in Bleach this week? No. Mostly a backstory.
I mean, is Shiomi like turning Rin down a thing? Is there
that moment
something about the whole sequence? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I liked it. I think I said this last week. There are things in that in Blue Exorcist that are happening that I like, but none of them that I would say this is going to be nominatable as a best moment of the year. I don't think so. But you can argue against me about it.
I'm not going to argue really hard about it. But it's just something that came to mind. Because, you know, we did spend a good amount of time with it, and it was something I think worthy of praise, so it came to mind, but I'm not going to, like, fight about it or whatever.
Yeah, nothing in Bleach that's standing out to me. You're right. It was mostly flashback.
Nothing really in nothing in One Piece. Nothing in Bashal. Some of Blue Exorcist moments, like Shiemi with Izumo at her house, were kind of nice as like a back half of the episode, but I don't know if that's really nominatable. So,
yeah.
I think we can just skip this week. We're good.
Okay. Yeah, we don't have to have something every week unless something is jumping out at us as being an amazing moment. We shouldn't force it.
Right.
Okay. No nominations this week. I think our nominations are pretty good, and we're getting close to the end of the year.
Yeah.
So well, I think we actually at some point
one more regular episode.
Yeah, one more week, right? Basically, and the year's over.
Yep.
Oh, that's true. So I think somebody's going to go into the thread and start requesting people
nominations. Yeah.
Offer some nominations to some of these and see what we can get. Particularly worst moment. We need worst moment stuff. We don't have enough of those. Or biggest disappointment. Also, that's pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
It just means this year's been too good, right?
Better than previous years.
It definitely has improved, I think, yeah. All right. Well, as we close out the show here, I do want to mention again, Seda, you said you're going to be out the next 2 weeks. Is that right?
Yeah, I can't do next week because I'm traveling. And the week after, I can't go either, but that'll just be like the Dundadon marathon. So,
right. So, only according to us.
So I'll miss one regular episode, basically. Of the podcast.
Right, right. We'll save that. I don't think we'll do an episode after the 29th. We will just save our discussion about the season 2 sneak peek.
Until the next week. Yeah.
But we probably will return next week. So Crocodile, I hope you can be here for that.
Yeah, that shouldn't be an issue for me. I'll let you know if something comes up, but next Monday should be fine.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be it for this episode. Thanks a lot for being here, Seda.
Yep, no problem.
And thank you again, Crocodile.
My pleasure.
All right. And again, check back next week for episode 455. And until then, later.